We'd like to continue with an original.
On Sunday, March 16th at 11 p.m., Sugar in My Bowl will offer the third installment as we look at the perspectives of four different women during Women's History Month. This week's guest is the Village Vanguard Club owner and daughter of Lorraine and Max Gordon, Deborah Gordon. That's Sunday, March 16th at 11 p.m., right here on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web. This is indeed Sugar in My Bowl. Tonight's guest is actually Deborah, not Deborah Gordon. We talk about that at the beginning. Deborah Gordon, who is the caretaker of the Village Vanguard, is the daughter of Lorraine and Max Gordon, Max is the former operator of the club, and Lorraine is still involved, as you will hear. And we are still in fundraising mode, from what I am told. Yes, so you need to call 212-209-2950 or go to give the number 2, WBAI.org. So coming up next on Sugar in My Bowl with me, Joyce Jones, and associate producer, Hank Williams, Deborah Gordon, and the Village Vanguard. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. This is Sugar.
We'd like to continue with an original. This one is called Backstairs.
I'm going to interrupt Dexter for a second just to let you know that the playlist is up on sugarinmybowl.org. That's S-U-G-A in my bowl.org, so you can go there. And also we have a little video that Deborah Gordon had created. It's a little preview of her as a filmmaker that gives a little history on the Village Vanguard, so if you want to check that out, we'll be talking about that later as well. Stay tuned. Thank you.
parting is such sweet sorrow. But I must say it's been very, very lovely. So for now, we say thank you for tonight, and good night, good night.
Deborah Gordon, at the Village Vanguard on March 13th, 2014. Yesterday, March 12th, was Max Gordon's birthday, my father, who opened the Village Vanguard, looking almost exactly like it is right now, with you and me sitting here by the heater. We shouldn't talk about that heater.
Is the heater a secret? Because it feels good over here.
It does feel good, doesn't it? I know. It's still chugging along. And in a funny way, it makes me think of him because it's just part of this room and my memory of this room as a kid and my memories of my father.
Is it Deborah or Deborah?
Deborah, oh yeah, Deborah. Once in a while, people will call me that, but officially Deborah Gordon, daughter to Lorraine and Max Gordon.
Well, thank you so much, Deborah Gordon, for meeting with Sugar in My Bowl.
Oh, Sugar in My Bowl. I love that. Actually, there's a picture of, when I hear that, of course, many people did the song, but probably somebody who sang it right here is Nina Simone.
Exactly. That's the theme that we use, actually.
Okay. Her singing it. Exactly. First, she heard it from Bessie Smith. But, no, she performed here. Sometimes at this hour, like we're here right now, 4:30, 5 o'clock in the afternoon, I'll put on Nina Simone or Dinah Washington or somebody who sang up on the stage there and just sit back and dream of those times.
Well, Deborah, thank you so much for allowing me to join you here and pick your brain about your place here. This place opened in 1935, right?
My father opened it in 1935. He did. And he opened it as a place for poets to come and, as he would say, declaim their poetry. And people would toss coins to show their appreciation. And my father was, at that time, called a bohemian, which I guess would translate to hippie. Or he was an aspiring writer himself and just liked to surround himself with writers and artists and musicians. And that's kind of, I think, what led him to opening a little spot. He actually had the Vanguard for a year in a different location around the corner prior to coming here. But it didn't have two exits. You have to have two exits if you're going to survive.
That's true. Now, I understand that also Professor Irwin Corey performed here back in that time.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. There seemed to be sort of unfolding chapters to who performed here after the poets. You know, times were changing. The village was changing, everything was kind of in flux, and I think my father realized that he wasn't going to survive with the poets, and so first what happened was a little group called the Reviewers, and that included Judy Holliday was in that. I don't know if you're familiar with who she was, Adolph Green and Betty Comden, and another person named John Hammer, and they were all students at NYU, and they came down. They just came down to the Vanguard one day, one rainy afternoon, because it was already kind of a spot, and proposed this little kind of review that they had written and were performing of political, topical, comedic sketches. And
was any of that ever recorded?
Yes. As a matter of fact, I have found sound recordings, because people weren't walking, they were walking around with little tape recorders here and there. Nothing was recorded live. Not like today where, you know, people are recording on things the size of your toenail. But I have heard recordings that were done of the kinds of things they would do here at the Vanguard. And there's photographs, some I think taken here on the same little stage. Oh, they were funny. They were just like satirical takeoffs on things of the period, like the World's Fair is unfair. Because the 39 World's Fair was on at the time. And some of the landmarks of New York were protesting because, I mean, that's what the sketch was, the Statue of Liberty, and they were angry that, you know, everyone was going up to the World's Fair. Or, you know, there were things maybe that were a little more pointed than that. For some reason, that one sticks in my head. But so Max said he wanted the reviewers to be here, but there wasn't room for the poets as well. And that shift was hard. And the poets protested. Really, they picketed the Vanguard outside with signs.
Like what poets were here?
Well, Maxwell Bodenheim, John Rose Gilday, maybe most famously because someone made a Hollywood movie about him, Joe Gould, people whose names are forgotten. Some of the beat poets later on would hang out here. In fact, I saw Amiri Baraka here just a few months ago. Yeah. But besides just coming down to hear music, at that time in the 50s, Kerouac and Ginsberg, there were some special events where they would be part of a performance. But it was, at that time, the Vanguard was already pretty solidly a jazz club. So he went from the poets to the reviewers, and then the reviewers left because they got a very fancy job up at the Rainbow Room. And that left another hole. All these holes kept opening, and then were filled by all kinds of comedians and folk singers, the Weavers and Richard Dyer Bennett, and Professor Irwin Corey was very much among the people who sort of inhabited the Vanguard during a period of time. Yeah, music was always part of the scene, even really early on. Even if it was just a radio playing up on stage, I saw a photograph once of the big radio. But music of one kind or another was part of the fabric of the place.
So at what point did this become a, quote, jazz club, unquote?
Well, it was an evolution, as I say. So, but maybe in the early 50s, other things started to drop away more. Television became a huge cultural, well, maybe I shouldn't use the word cultural. Let's just say a huge magnet that sucked, you know, certain kinds of people away. But thankfully, that magnet didn't give a darn about jazz, which is really good, you know. I think it just always has stayed a peripheral kind of music in the culture. And I think that maybe it counts for its survival in a way.
So I understand your mother came into the picture. She was married to Alfred Lyons of Blue Note Records,
yeah.
And then she met your father.
Yeah, she'd been married to Alfred Lyons, who I never got to meet, but she remains quite a force. And so she had her own kind of connection to music before she met my father.
What was her connection?
Well, her connection was, as a teenager, she and her brother had a fanatical love of jazz. They grew up many places, but most notably in Newark, New Jersey. And they and their friends as teenagers started something called the Newark Hot Club. And they collected jazz records. And they used to come to the Vanguard when they were teenagers and sit at that bar there sharing a soda amongst themselves. My mother always talks about how she overheard my father one day saying, "Get rid of those kids. They're ruining my business." But they were just music lovers, aficionados in their own right. And then my mother, I don't know how, but met and married Alfred Lyons and worked with him at Blue Note Records for, I think, about 7 years or so. Yeah.
What was she doing there?
Everything. I mean, I think it was just a very small record company where everybody did everything. So she was in on with all the sessions, and she's, you know, she's a very organized, energetic person, and if she believes in you or in a musician or somebody, she will go all out 100%, as she did with Thelonious Monk, for instance, who I think he had played here once before she kind of reintroduced him or tried to get my father, this was before she was married to my father, to convince him of Monk's genius.
Thank you. tell you what you're listening to right now. You should identify. Well, you know. Okay. It's Thelonious Monk. Thelonious Monk Quartet, as a matter of fact. Hackensack's the name of the song. It's from the last concerts. Lincoln Center, which took place in 1975, and Village Vanguard, which you're listening to a cut from that, from that was recorded in 1972. This is a two CD set, and it's if you go to the sugarinmybowl.org playlist, you'll be able to press on the link and go to where you can obtain this, because it's not something. I don't know. It sounds like maybe it was bootleg. Who knows? But that's where it is. It's a two CD set. Thelonious Monk on piano. Paul Jeffrey on tenor saxophone. That's what we're talking over right now. Dave Holland on bass. Yes, Dave Holland played with Thelonious Monk. Surprise me. T.S. Monk on drums. And it's a 1972 Fresh Sound release. Before that, we heard Softly as in a Morning Sunrise. John Coltrane from Live at the Village Vanguard. Yes, that's the theme that will be running through these recordings. They took place at the Village Vanguard or are about the Village Vanguard. Live at the Village Vanguard, The Master Takes. John Coltrane on soprano sax, McCoy Tyner on piano, Reggie Workman on bass, and Elvin Jones on drums. It was originally recorded in 1961. This is a 1997 Impulse reissue. And before that, we heard Backstairs from Dexter Gordon Homecoming live at the Village Vanguard. Dexter Gordon on tenor saxophone. There's Monk right now. Wait a minute. Let me hurry up. Dexter Gordon on tenor saxophone, Woody Shaw on trumpet, Ronnie Matthews on piano, Stafford James on bass, and Lewis Hayes on drums. 1977 Columbia Records release. And I got this from the Complete Columbia Records box set of Dexter Gordon recordings. And thank you, Woody Shaw III, for passing that on to me. And we opened up the program with I Want a Little Sugar in My Bowl, our theme. Stay tuned for more discussion with Deborah Gordon, the caretaker of the Village Vanguard, and Sugar in My Bowl with me, Joyce Jones, and my associate producer, Hank Williams. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Stay tuned. Thank you.
Convinced him to hire him, which he did, much to his dismay at that time.
Yeah, I understood. He wasn't exactly making a lot with Monk being around.
Nor with any jazz musician, really, you know. But I guess that wasn't the point. Yeah.
So now I want to talk about you just a little bit before we get back to your parents. You came along once your father and mother got together. And I understand that you were actually interested in film before you took over helping around the club.
Yeah. Well, more than just interested, I worked in film. I was a film editor. In a way, something analogous to what jazz is to the music world, independent documentaries are to the film world, but what jazz is to music. And so for years, yeah, I worked as an editor, sometimes a co-producer of independent documentaries that you've never heard of or seen.
Well, you never know, because I like documentaries. So what have you worked on?
Well, in the music films, a couple things I cut. Well, one jazz film I cut was about Maxine Sullivan. She sang here for years. And I got a film about Frankie Lyman and the teenagers, a whole variety of things, as you, what you end up doing as an editor, you know. One thing I co-produced, though, and spent a long time on, was a film about several generations of a Navajo family from 1939 up to what was then the present. So we had film, we had footage, and the anthropologist who had taken that footage, and we went back and did sort of a longitudinal look at a particular family still living on the reservation.
What year was it when it was brought to that present?
It was the 80s, yeah.
Are any of these films available that still?
I don't know. I don't know. But the last thing I did was about 4 years ago. It was the 75th anniversary of the Vanguard. So I got my son to teach me a little bit about editing on a computer. And I actually hired a young girl, film student at NYU, to really teach me how to use a computerized editing system. And I put together like a little short, about 14 minute piece or something, about the really early years of the Vanguard. Before jazz, what we were talking about before, the poets, the comedians, the reviewers. I take it right up till I found some footage of Lenny Bruce here on that stage on an afternoon in an interview like this, but with Nat Hentoff was on that side,
oh, right.
And Lenny Bruce was up on the stage doing some interesting things,
nice.
Sometimes on his back with his legs in the air. So that was the last thing I edited. It was great. You know, I could stay up all by myself at 1, 2 in the morning, and my son taught me how to take things off of YouTube. Yeah, so that was it.
Did you go to school for film?
No.
Oh, okay.
No, I went to, I took some film classes. I graduated from City College.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. And really, I was in the theater department there. And I took a film class here and there. I had one great film teacher, Kathy Collins.
So do you create projects for yourself? Do you do things when you have a moment? Do you create
cool
for yourself?
Projects? Rarely. Sometimes I like to do things with my teenage son because he enjoys it. So once in a while we'll do a little something. But no, sometimes I dream about expanding that project I just told you about, you know. I wanted to keep it short. I kind of learned the value of keeping things short in film, you know. But for every person that was in it, there were five people I had to take out, you know. I mean, the roster, or every person maybe you've heard of who was here, there were 10 where you would scratch your head and go, wow, who's that? I never heard of them. Although it was interesting to me because the young kids who work here now, who work in the kitchen, or I'll mention names, like Lenny Bruce, even. Mm-hmm. They have no idea who that is.
Right.
You know, or certainly not Judy Holliday.
Wow.
Or, yeah. And Judy Holliday's partners in the reviewers, Adolph Green and Betty Comden, mm-hmm. And they wrote On the Town. They wrote Peter Pan, you know, actually there's some lyrics in some of the songs in On the Town that make me think they were thinking of the Vanguard, you know.
Come on, sister. Gather a crowd around you. Make a pitch. Get hip.
Yes, sir. Hip. Get hip. Get hip. Step up. Step up. Step up. Step up. Get hip. Get hip. Come on down to the Village Vortex, home of that new jazz rage swing. Rock and roll to the beat, beat, beat of Speedy Valenti and his crazy cats.
Hey, cats, get a load of the square.
Swing, dig the rhythm. Swing, dig the message. The jive is jumping and the music goes round and around. Wall.
Get her.
Goes around and around. Cats, make it solid. Cats, make it groovy. You gotta get your seafood mama. Your favorite dish is fish. It's your favorite dish. Don't be square. Rock right out of that rocking chair. Truck on down and let down your hair. Breathe some barrel house air. The Village Vortex. Swing. Take the rhythm. Swing. Take the message. The jive is jumping and the music is frowning around. Get full of Furiyaki Saki. Get full of the sound of swing. the solid, groovy, jivey sound of
swing. Dig the rhythm. Swing. Dig the message. Jive is up and the music is running around. Whoa!
So what was it like for you growing up with your parents and this club?
It was great. I mean, first of all, my parents left me alone entirely, I would say. If I wanted to see my father, more or less I would come to the club. My mother did not work here at the time. She only worked at the Vanguard when my father, first when he started getting older and needing a little help, and then after he passed away. But she was always off, either working a job or working in the peace movement. And so I was pretty much just on the cusp of being a hippie, you know, I'd say. And I would come here. It was just a easy go. It was hard for me to get friends to come with me, I remember. You know, nobody quite knew what was going on here, you know. So it did set me apart just a little bit, you know. But I went to the Fillmore and was perfectly happy listening to all kinds of music.
Did the artists stop by a house or anything?
No, I mean, there definitely were musicians that my father would count among his friends. Bill Evans, Roland Kirk. But many of the relationship is on a different kind of level. Friendly, absolutely. But somebody like you're going to go out and have a meal with, it's just like any other part of life. How many friends do you have? How many old friends do you have, you know? It's in a different category, you know?
Is it more because they were working together? He had the club and they were performers and it was a different dichotomy in that way?
It has to play into the relationship, no doubt about it. And I would say it's the most difficult for me now that I'm kind of transitioning in my relationship to the club and some of the things that I need to do. It's the most difficult part of everything is saying no, you know, and things aren't on a personal level, you know. It's like separating the personal from the working. Maybe men do that more easily. I don't know. Sometimes I think they compartmentalize more easily, you know, than women.
Good evening, jazz fans. This is Hank Williams, and welcome to On the Bandstand for March 16th. In this segment of the show, we bring you aerial listings of Sugar and My Bowl guests so you can experience them live. You can see the work of tonight's guest, Deborah Gordon, most nights at the Village Vanguard. See villagevanguard.com for upcoming shows. You can catch organist Akiko Tsuruga at her regular Monday night gig at Manhattan's Kotobuki Restaurant. She'll be there on March 17th and 24th. Details are at kotobukinewyork.com. I'll give that one more time slowly. That's kotobukinewyork.com. Organist John Medeski will be at the Town Hall with John Zorn on March 19th. See thetownhall.org for tickets or info on this show. That's thetownhall.org. Also on the 19th, pianist Harold Mayburn leads a trio at Smalls Jazz Club. See smallsjazzclub.com for info on this show. That's smallsjazzclub.com. Bassist Alex Blake appears at Birdland for a CD release party with the Puppeteers on the 20th. Go to birdlandjazz.com for details on this show. Drummer Bobby Sanabria will be appearing with Annette Montague for a jazz brunch at the New Jersey Performing Arts Center in Newark on March 23rd. See njpac.org for details. That's njpac.org. Looking further ahead, guitarist Pat Metheny's Unity Band has three area shows at the end of March. You can catch them in Red Bank, New Jersey at the Count Basie Theater on March 23rd, in Fairfield, Connecticut at Fairfield University's Quick Center for the Arts on the 25th, and in New York at the Town Hall Theater on the 28th. Metheny's website has links for all the shows at patmetheny.com, and click on the link for the schedule. That's patmetheny.com. That's all for this week. If you missed anything, you can see the listings at the Sugar in My Bowl blog. Go to sugarinmybowl.org and click on the link for the blog. Tonight's playlist and audio from this and previous shows are on the website as well. Remember that WBAI is still in serious financial trouble. Help us stay on the air by pledging whatever you can at give2wbai.org. where you can consider becoming a WBAI buddy with a monthly pledge. This is Hank Williams signing off. We'll see you next week, March 23rd, on the Bandstand.
That's right, March 23rd. Hank will be back with the Bandstand, and you can find out what's happening during that upcoming week of former Sugar Guests. What you heard before the Bandstand, before our talking, was from a play, Wonderful Town. It was the instrumental was Ballet at the Village Vortex. It was Rosalind Russell and cast, and the music was written by Leonard Bernstein, words and lyrics by Betty Comden and Adolph Green on swing. That was the get the rhythm, get hip. And what you're listening to now in the background of the Bandstand is a mandola. Miles Davis is a mandola. So stay tuned for more Sugar in My Bowl and Deborah Gordon on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
check this out. This is Chuck, your public enemy number one, the rebel without a pause, bringing the noise and fighting the power right here to the Sights and Sounds. That's right, Sights, 99.5 WBAI.
So how was it decided what performers would be here?
How is it or was it?
How was it and then how is it?
It was, I think, purely on my father's taste and instinct. Yeah, kind of amazing, really.
How would he come across the people?
Well, I think sometimes there even used to be people would come and try out sometimes. I've seen photographs of, like, my father sitting out here with nobody in the room and somebody auditioning. Sometimes there were auditions and at a certain period of time, or maybe more for singers and comedians. And sometimes one person leads you to another, or sometimes there's somebody in somebody's group who starts to emerge more. So, yeah, a whole variety of ways. But I think ultimately on his taste, yeah.
How does that work for you?
In choosing? Well, things are in pretty much of a groove in a way. Although I sometimes wonder if my father came back today, what he would think of the music. I mean, we have a wide range and variety.
Like, what do you have? Because, you know, for those who just hear the name Village Vanguard, they just think jazz. So what else is going on?
No, but I mean, within jazz, we present a wide range of styles. Some is more mainstream, what people call mainstream bebop style, and some is much more edgy and modern and avant-garde, maybe. So there's a big spectrum. Of course, that was true for my father. I mean, when he first had Bill Frisell here. Bill Frisell's coming next week.
Thank you.
So when's the first time Frizzell was here was when my father was alive. So we're talking and, yeah, he hired Bill Frizzell, but it was like, whoa, you know. Now he sounds kind of, well, our ears are used to him.
So how do you decide who's going to be here?
I don't really yet at this point. My mother's Lorraine is still very much at the helm that way. I kind of know what she likes, and she knows what she likes, and she likes what she knows. But you don't want to get, and neither does she, want to get stuck. You both have to, I think, respect the place and the past, but you have to also know how to look forward into the future, and it's a kind of balance.
I notice in people who've been at the Vanguard, there seems to be like, there are certain performers who have like an engagement. They have a week. I don't know if they get it completely, but Jerry Allen has been here for some time, or Christian McBride, or Bill Frizzell. Are there other people that actually have that?
Are you, who are here on a kind of regular basis? Yeah, very much so. Fred Hirsch. I mean, that's kind of what I was, the Heath Brothers. Now, somebody who just came back, who hadn't been here for years, was Branford Marsalis. He's so busy, you know, and he found a way to come back. But now you might not see him for a few years. But everyone I can see on here, Tom Harrell, Kenny Barron, Kurt Rosenwinkel, are people who come on a pretty regular basis, yeah. And then you're always thinking, though, who haven't you thought of or who might be interesting in the mix? But as I was saying, I think the most difficult part is people asking and having to...
You mean you asking or Lorraine asking or
no,
the club asking? The musicians ask.
If you have a week, can I get in? You know, that's a very difficult thing to... Well, first of all, there are only 52 weeks. It's not that much. And everybody plays for a week. Of course, the group that's had the most regular run here would be what's now called the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra. Mm-hmm. So that's 40 years every Monday night. We had to close too this winter because it was so brutal, but that's unusual. You know, or they go away once in a while. At this point, when they go away, we just close for a night. So that's pretty long-standing. That was formerly the Thad Jones Mel Lewis Big Band, and they continue. They have a lot of the great Thad Jones charts, and then more recent material written by Jim McNeely and other composers.
Is Jim McNeely the director, or is that someone else?
No, there's no. It's a collective, but he often plays piano. He comes in and goes, but at a certain point, he wrote some music for the band, but so is Slide Hampton, did a project. So they mix it up, but they're always, Thad Jones is the beating heart that keeps a band thriving.
How do they get members? Do you know?
Well, you know, if you really look at a list of who's held which chair over those years, there's been very little change. Very little. I mean, sometimes there's subs on a week, but the person who holds that spot is pretty stable. So there's not a lot of coming and going.
Wow.
Yeah.
All right. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. Sugar in my bowl, we are now listening to the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra, Los Cucarachas Entran. I think that's Entran. And this is from the Grammy Award-winning Monday Night Live at the Village Vanguard, 2008 Planet Arts release. Before that, we heard The Vanguard. That was the name of the piece by Bill Frisell from East West. This is actually a two-CD set. That one CD, CD 1, is from The West, which was recorded at Yoshi's in Oakland, California. And CD 2, which is where The Vanguard came from, is the East, and it was recorded at the Village Vanguard on 7th Avenue South. Bill Frisell on electric guitar, acoustic guitar, and loops on others. Kenny Wollinson on drums, percussion. Tony Shear on bass, acoustic guitar, and this is a 2005, that was a 2005 None Such Records release. And just so you know, I just thought I'd read the members of the Vanguard Jazz Orchestra. Trumpets is Nick Marchione, Tanya Darby, Terrell Stafford, and Scott Wendholt. Trombones is John Mosca, Luis Bonilla, Jason Jackson, and Douglas Perviance. And on reeds, we have Dick Oates, Billy Drews, Ralph LaLama, Rich Perry, Gary Smolian, Frank Basil. And on rhythms, in the rhythm section, we have Jim McNeely and Michael West on piano. David Wong, who plays with Roy Haynes and Jimmy Heath on bass, and John Riley on drums. And they have two sets, Monday nights, from one's at 8:30 and one's at 10:30 p.m. I was there last night, seeing Al Foster and his quartet. His last night was tonight, the 16th, so he's probably ended and done. But Bill Frisell will be there next week on March 18th, from March 18th through the 23rd, with Beautiful Dreamers. It says Evan Kane, Rudy Royston, drummer, plus special guests Thomas Morgan, Greg Osby, and Jason Moran on different nights. And the Heath Brothers are going to be there on the following week with Jimmy Heath, speaking of the Jimmy Heath. Jimmy Heath and Tootie, Albert Kaumba, Tootie Heath, Jeb Patton, and David Wong. So if you go to thevillagevanguard.com, you can find out more about what's happening. Let's continue to listen to this Grammy-winning ensemble. Stay tuned for more Sugar in My Bowl and Deborah Gordon on WBAI New York, 99.5 FM, and WBAI.org on the web.
Thank you.
If I'm not mistaken, did they win a Grammy?
They did. It's been a couple years. They won a Grammy for a CD that they recorded. Guess where?
Here.
Yeah. And John Mosca, the trombonist, who kind of is the MC, he always announces that, you know, we have CDs and we won this Grammy, and there's usually not much recognition of that. And he goes, we really must be in New York. You know, other places you say a Grammy and everybody goes wild. Here, I don't give a damn. But it is a beautiful CD. And they're doing a recording soon, I think, of some new material. In fact, they unearthed some Thad Jones charts that have never been played. They've never played even. So they keep recording, which is great. Not that anybody buys records anymore, but I guess you can download.
Someone's buying something because I'm going to be talking to Motema Records next week. So, Jana. Yeah. Now, recording. The Village Vanguard started recording live here with Sonny Rollins in 1957.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Thank you very kindly for Elvin Jones on drums, formerly of the great J.J. Johnson Orchestra, now playing with Stan Getz, and tonight, of course, he's playing with myself, Sonny Rollins. And on bass, the very great Wilbur B. Weir. We'd like to take a brief pause. Thank you. Thank you.
How did that start?
Now that I don't know. Okay. All I can tell you is that recordings continue to be made here, not all the time, but once in a while. And since equipment is so much more portable and easy, we used to have a huge setup that would go in the kitchen with cables running. And yeah, something else we've been doing once in a while, not just recordings, but can I say WBGO? Because
yes, you,
you had Rhonda Hamilton on.
Exactly.
WBGO has been doing live broadcasts from here. We're hopefully about to start it up again with hopefully our landlord, yet no, we do not own the building. Yeah, my father did not believe in ownership in any way, shape, or form.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. Okay. You can't own anything, just like you can't own the Vanguard. In fact, he would kind of bristle at that idea. Do you own the Vanguard? No, the Vanguard doesn't have an owner. I understand what he means.
Well, I can understand as far as caretaking the planet sort of thing, but this is a club.
Yeah. Well, it kind of ends up owning you as part of it. And the caretaking, I think, was the key for him, too, is you need to listen to it. It's almost a living, breathing thing, and you have to respect it and take care of it. So with the grace of our landlord, hopefully next week, a meeting with our landlord and some technical people in BGO to see if we can put a little antenna up on the roof to enhance the signal for WBGO to do a live broadcast from here, which are fantastic. I mean, they're having all kinds of technical problems because of Verizon just cannot get it together.
That's always the issue about doing remotes, Verizon.
Thank you. Yeah, like that is definitely a four-letter word. But BGO has just done fabulous broadcasts from down here with...
You've had Barry Harris.
Oh, yeah, all kinds of people. And it's worldwide. I mean, you can be, as I was telling our landlord, he's Chinese, so I was telling him, you know, you could be in China and see a set of music at the Vanguard. I think he was kind of impressed by that.
Yeah. Because they also stream during the broadcast.
They stream during the broadcast, yeah. So it's very exciting, mm-hmm. I think. So if we can get it to look a little better, that'll be great. Yeah.
As far as recording, what label? Is there like a general Vanguard label, or you just go to different labels that record from here when they're doing live from the Vanguard?
I don't go to anybody. There's no Vanguard label. We do not do any recording ourselves. An artist will come to us and say, sometimes they're self-produced, or sometimes there's one of the dwindling labels who want to do something. But we don't generate recordings ourselves, no.
Do you know of anything in the works?
No, not at the moment. Fred Hirsch was just here, but he decided to do his recording in the studio. I mean, the sound of recordings is so different now. You know, like if you put on the Bill Evans or something earlier and you really hear the sound of the room, I mean, the sound's fantastic in here, but you don't hear that. Once in a while, somebody will be sensitive to that and hang a microphone right in the room to kind of maybe mix that in a little bit, which I always like.
Well, that's what makes it live to me.
Exactly. Why bother otherwise? Well, although why bother is because the music that you're going to make in front of an audience is just going to be different.
Right. But an occasional hey from the, you know, the crowd doesn't hurt.
Yeah. I know. Do you know that album? I mean, I guess it's Sundays at the Vanguard, Bill Evans. And you have glasses clinking in the background, and people kind of murmuring, and yeah. We make an announcement now before every show, which is, please turn off your cell phones.
Right.
Please leave them off. Do not text. Please don't take photographs. And please, if you're going to talk, you know, there's a way to do it. That's respect, because, it's a different. It's a little different now.
I know, as an audience participant, I usually appreciate those announcements because I don't want to hear somebody's conversation. I want to hear the person who I came to see, the music, you know. And so, thank you.
And I really don't want to see people looking at their screens. I find that so offensive.
Yeah.
Or texting. Or often they're like, as one customer said to me the other night when I asked them to please turn that off, they said, well, I can't record otherwise.
Oh, goodness. So blatant.
Not only blatant, but entitled.
Right.
Yeah, very entitled. You know.
Wow.
Maybe they should make the next live recording.
They probably will.
And it's probably up on YouTube.
Right.
You know, so you can only fight it within your little four walls.
I've also been places where photography, it's like, you know how cameras, they don't flash. They have like a light, a dim light or something that sort of comes on. I take it artists don't want to be photographed at all here.
Yeah, they don't. And sometimes the flashes, they're annoying.
Well, flash is annoying.
Yeah.
But the sort of dim amber light or something that comes on.
Well, often, like the cameras now, mostly you're not looking through the viewfinder, but you have the window, and so everybody has to see what you're doing. It's extremely distracting.
Yeah.
So it's easier to just say, don't do it, you know? Before, after, you're welcome, you know? But just not during. It just becomes disrespectful.
Right. I mean, there's like basic club etiquette. It's like, you know, the Village Vanguard creates a book. It's like Club Etiquette 101 by Deborah Gordon.
Well, no, when Jed makes the announcement, I always hear him say, you know, please keep the chatter down to a minimum. Don't talk, because that's the jazz way, you know. He kind of puts it in that context. Although, I got to say, the jazz way, when I used to come here when I was a teenager, it was pretty wild.
Mm.
You know, first of all, there was smoking.
Oh.
So this place was just in a haze. There was plenty of talking going on constantly. The whole back here was just, nobody complained about it. The musicians didn't complain. The other patrons didn't really complain that I knew of. It was very different.
Mm.
It's definitely become somewhat more sanitized.
There are people talking about all kinds of stuff. And it's during like a ballad.
I agree.
I guess I'm one of those newfound antiseptic folk. I mean, I don't mind talking at the stage. You know, it's like, yeah, play that. That makes sense to me, you know, but.
Yeah. I'm with you. Yeah. I'm with you, and I certainly don't miss the smoke.
Yeah, right. Was it last year that your mother received a NEA Jazzmaster? In 2013?
Yeah.
And you accepted?
Yeah.
How was that?
Actually in a little bit of a haze for me because she just wasn't in the greatest health. So that's really more where my mind was at rather than accepting a great, you know, obviously an honor, you know, but I think my thoughts were in a different place at the time.
How is she now?
She's fantastic, you know. She really is. She's a force. And I'm not the same kind of force that she is, but I think she knows that and respects that. And I think she feels that I do things my way and they're not the same way that she does things, but she's okay with that.
Now, this is a question from Miss Whitney. She observed that there aren't a lot of vocalists usually on the bill. Is that true?
Yeah. Well, there aren't a lot of vocalists.
And she was wondering why.
Miss Whitney.
Yeah, that's her first name.
Well, Miss Whitney, would you like to come here? It's funny. It's the Vanguard is a very people will tell you about the sound of the room. I don't need to go into that. It's a hard room, and singers do sound great in here. Mm-hmm. But something invariably goes wrong when there's singers here.
Really? What happens?
No, it's strange. I'll tell you, I mean, I've been so unbelievably privileged to hear Shirley Horn in here, and something invariably went wrong, as she would have told you right from the stage. We're not a sophisticated sound room. Very simple. And
so you mean like the mic tricks? Some singers want mic tricks, like reverb or whatever.
Yeah, you got it. I'll tell you, the singer who just was the most down to earth, I think, in a way, and the most relaxed was Etta Jones. Mm. You know, just to hear her was pure and utter pleasure, and, you know, to be around her. I don't know. It's not like we go, no, you can't be singers. It's just trickier, and they're fewer and far between, mm-hmm. I think. And like I said, I put on the singers, Eartha Kitt, or I guess Dinah Washington. No one can touch her for me. To think of her singing up there, you know, and storing her furs in the back room gives me a lot of pleasure.
Okay, so you've heard it. It's not that they're anti-vocalists.
You know who came back? I was sitting, this was a couple years ago, I was back in the kitchen's the office, sitting next to my mother one day, and I just heard, like, she's famous for her snorting. She has a big snort, and the phone, boom, she bangs it down. I said, what was that? She said, ah, some joke, somebody calling about Barbara Streisand wanting to come in, you know, whatever. 30 seconds later, the phone rings. Well, it wasn't a joke, and well, she came in and sang here. It was pretty amazing. She was great.
Was she okay? Was there a problem?
There wasn't. But, I mean, she has a machine that ensures there's no problem.
Okay.
Right. No ghosts to that machine.
She came with her own sound.
For the most part.
Yeah. Yeah. And I got to say, her own natural sound sounded pretty good. And I remember she got up on the stage, and she just kind of looked around, and she said, how can you have stage fright here? There is no stage. Yeah, once in a while. Whitney, once in a while.
Did they record that, of Barbara Streisand?
Oh, my God, yeah. They play it, like, till you want to, like, whatever, on fundraising on Channel 13.
Oh, okay, yeah. Okay.
It's a DVD somewhere.
Something, yeah. Yeah, yeah, no, they did.
Wow.
Were you here that night?
Yeah.
So how was it getting in? I mean, was it closed off and it was...
They ran a kind of contest or something. So either you had to be Bill Clinton or somebody who won. It was kind of cool. Some folks just won seats to come in. So there was a whole mix of people.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Everyone had
controlled.
A seat.
It was controlled in that, yeah. Kind of funny.
Actually, I'm looking at the sign now. It says occupancy by more than 123 persons is dangerous and unlawful.
Yeah, and we pretty much stick to that. We know how to get a few more folks in. But you want to be comfortable, too, you know? So we don't ever do, like, standing room or anything like that. It's not worth it. You'd be surprised the little nooks and crannies that people can find.
Tell me about Jed Eisenman.
Jed Eisenman, yes. Well, Jed's worked here longer than I have. He worked for my father, which I never did. My father did not want me to work here for him, for that matter. Yes, he didn't consider it an appropriate great spot for a girl to work. Yeah, I think he was a little more protective of me. As I said, in some of those wild days, I mean, I can understand why he felt that. But Jed started as dishwasher.
Wow.
Yeah, but that happens a lot here. There's not that many places, not that much to do, I mean, in that regard, you know. So often people start as a dishwasher and then, maybe become a server on the floor, or bartender, or whatever. But Jed soon became more of a manager, which is what he continues to be. And he has said this to me himself, which is the only reason I feel like I can say it, but that for him, meeting Max Gordon was a kind of turning point in his life. Just meeting somebody who he felt that he wanted to be like in some way. You know, you have those people. They're teachers or somebody you come across. And for Jed, it was Max. And Jed, well, he's our memory. He has a phenomenal memory, and he's a great storyteller. And so he holds a whole kind of history of the club that I don't even know. You know, he'll sit me down and tell me stories, and I'm like, really? Really? You know, so he has a whole other repository of knowledge and feeling about the place. So he and I kind of, we work together a lot now.
Being in this role for you, and I know you started as in a sort of helping capacity, but now it's sort of like you're more involved than you originally were, I guess. And so where are you with that?
Well, everything just feels like an evolution here. You know, like I said, you start as a dishwasher, and wherever a place opens up, of course, it's a little different for me. For me, it's just a piece of luck, you know. I'm just lucky that I could be here. You know, it came at the right time for me when my mother said to me, do you want to come work with me? When my father died, and I was like, yeah, the film world is changing so much and not in a direction that is comfortable for me. So, yeah, let me give it a try. It's a dark place, like an editing room, and I think I can adapt, and I liked it. And so that worked out. But I didn't come the way my mother came, or I didn't come the way my father even came. I came because I happened to be their daughter. But I have a feeling for this place. I mean, maybe my sense is one of, maybe I'm a kind of preservationist, and I feel that strongly for this place, that it's part of not only my family and who I am, but it's part of this city, and it's part of this culture and this world, and I feel that that's something to nurture. And I take lessons from my father, I take lessons from my mother, and I think all three of us, though, would be together on that feeling of it's a place you have to take care of, and it will take care of you.
Can no. I read you something?
Oh, please.
I don't know why. It just reminded my mother wrote this book. My father wrote a book, too. They're big readers and writers.
What was the name of your father's book?
Live at the Village Vanguard. And my mother's is Alive at the Village Vanguard. I guess if I ever wrote one myself, I'd have to call it, you know, Living at the Village Vanguard.
Right.
I think that's all that's left.
That's it.
Let's see. There's just a little thing I remembered from the book my mother wrote. It's at the end. I feel like, I mean, she's just talking directly to me. She says, I could sign a 100-year lease for the Vanguard anytime I want to, but I figure my current lease should outlast me, and who cares after that? Let my daughter Deborah and her cohort sign the next lease. It's in their hands. Everything is set up for the next generation. My daughter knows a lot. She may not be as pushy as me, but that's all right. She'll do it her way.
That is perfect. That's exactly what I was going to ask you about the future. Since the building isn't owned by you,
right?
Is there a possibility that it could be, and then it could receive landmark status or something?
You know, the head of the Landmarks Commission of the city, Mr. Tierney, is a huge jazz fan. He comes here all the time. You know, my mother knows him, but ask him that question. I mean, I think the answer that comes back is that rooms are not landmarked, although some have been, actually. In the Greenwich Village, all the buildings are landmarked automatically, although, as you know, everything gets chipped away at the edges.
Well, thank you so much, Deborah Gordon, for sharing this time and sharing your living at the Village Vanguard.
Well, thank you, Joyce, for asking me.
Thank you.
All right. Let me get past this so we can listen to the rest of Bill Evans. What we're listening to right now is Waltz for Debbie. It's one of those popular hits by Bill Evans. Popular compositions. This is the Bill Evans Trio, the Village Vanguard Sessions. And it's Bill Evans on piano, Scott LaFaro on bass, Paul Motion on drums. Gosh, all three of them are gone. Essential Jazz Classics is the label, originally recorded in 1961, and this is a 2012 reissue. Before that, we heard Sonny Rollins, Old Devil Moon. It's Sonny Rollins, A Night at the Village Vanguard. Sonny Rollins on tenor saxophone, as mentioned, Wilbur Ware on bass, and Elvin Jones on drums. This was originally recorded in 1957. This is a 1999 reissue. And as mentioned during the exchange with Deborah Gordon, the caretaker and preservationist of the Village Vanguard, next week's guest will be Jana Herzen of Motema Records. And that should be fun. It is going to be fun, actually. So stay tuned for La Nueva Alternativa. And as I said, I'm going to be still so we can hear the rest of Bill Evans and the gang doing Waltz for Debbie. I am not calling Deborah Debbie. Just, you know, it was the perfect song to play. Anyway, stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM. My name's Joyce Jones. We'll be back next week, the 23rd, as will the bandstand with our associate producer, Hank Williams. Stay tuned for more on WBAI. Give. Call 212-209-2950. Listen to the room ambiance. Isn't that funky? Anyway, stay tuned. I really had fun playing this live music from the Vanguard. I hope you enjoyed listening to it. Stay tuned. This is WBAI New York, 99.5 FM and WBAI.org on the web.
Hello? Bueno, this is Sonia Sanchez. I urge you to give your generous support to listener-sponsored community radio, WBAI 99.5 FM in New York.